Hello, and welcome back to the Knowledge Force Hypothesis Podcast. I'm Mark, and with me, as always, is my inquisitive co-host, Archie. Today is a special deep dive, Episode 7, Bridging Perspectives and Synthesizing Thought. We'll explore how the Knowledge Force Hypothesis, my bold thought experiment, which began with a simple what if. What if knowledge behaves like a universal force driving complexity? A thought-provoking, non-human-centered idea on the evolution of knowledge, a new lens. The Knowledge Force Hypothesis is surprisingly resonating with a wide spectrum of scientific and philosophical thoughts, from the early 20th century all the way to the latest developments in 2025. Open your ears, mind, and buckle up. We're about to connect some surprising dots across time and disciplines.
Thanks, Mark, and hi everyone, with an extra special hello for Christiane, one of our much-valued curious listeners. In our last episodes, we laid out the core of the Knowledge Force Hypothesis and its components, those famous SRACL factors, substrate capacity, receptivity, agency, connectivity, and longevity. Today, we're indeed stepping back to see the bigger picture, how the Knowledge Force Hypothesis is not an isolated whim but part of a grand tapestry of ideas. Mark, you mentioned it's like weaving threads from different philosophies and sciences into one tapestry of knowledge evolution. Shall we start with some of the visionaries who hinted at this idea long ago?
Great idea! The notion that knowledge might be a fundamental driving force isn't entirely new. Before we dive in, let me give you a preview of the intellectual journey ahead. Today, we're going to meet some fascinating minds across the centuries who've all glimpsed pieces of what we're calling the knowledge force.
It's quite a lineup. We'll start with Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit priest paleontologist from the 1920s who envisioned a noosphere of planetary mind. Then we'll jump to modern physicist David Deutsch and his ideas about unbounded knowledge growth.
From there, we'll explore the mathematical foundations with Claude Shannon's information theory and Gregory Bateson's insights about meaningful differences. We'll see how cybernetics pioneers like Norbert Wiener and Ross Ashby gave us the language of feedback and control.
Then it's on to the philosophers of knowledge itself, Karl Popper with his trial and error science, Donald Campbell's universal learning algorithm, and process thinkers like Whitehead and Bergson, who saw reality as pure becoming.
And we'll connect it all to today's burning questions about AI alignment, consciousness research, and even physicists asking whether information might have mass. It's ambitious, but that's what happens when you're tracking a force that spans from quantum mechanics to cosmic destiny.
Ready for this wild ride through the landscape of knowledge? Let's start where it all began.
Part 1 of 7. Where ancient wisdom meets modern science. For instance, early 20th century thinkers like Pierre Teilhard de Chardin had a vision of cosmic evolution that resonates strongly with the knowledge force hypothesis. Teilhard was a Jesuit paleontologist who proposed the law of complexity consciousness, the idea that as matter becomes more complex, consciousness or knowledge rises in tandem. He imagined that the Earth, through life and then through human minds, is growing a global noosphere, a sphere of mind enveloping the planet. In Teilhard's view, evolution has a direction towards higher organization and awareness, almost as if the universe wants to produce more knowledge. This culminates in what he called the Omega Point, an ultimate stage of complexity in consciousness, where the noosphere becomes unified.
It's poetic and a bit mystical, but the parallel to the knowledge force hypothesis is clear. Teilhard basically suggested that knowledge and consciousness growth is baked into the cosmos. Our knowledge force hypothesis picks up that vibe, but tries to frame it in more scientific terms, less theology, more testable hypothesis. And he was way ahead of his time. These ideas came in the 1920s, 1950s. Back then, science didn't have the tools to quantify information or knowledge as we do now.
Exactly. The crucial distinction here is, as you mentioned, Archie, that Teilhard's vision was explicitly teleological, guided toward a predetermined end. The Knowledge Force hypothesis shares his awe at the trajectory from particles to thinking beings, but frames the mechanism in non-teleological, emergent terms. The Knowledge Force hypothesis isn't a guided missile aimed at a future target. It's more like water flowing downhill, finding paths of least resistance and carving ever more complex channels. Random. Similar to gravity, how electricity flows. Emergent. Now, let's fast forward to more recent thinkers. David Deutsch, a physicist and philosopher, echoes some of this in a modern key. Deutsch argues that the growth of knowledge is potentially unbounded, limited only by the laws of nature and our own creativity. In his book, The Beginning of Infinity, published in 2011, he suggests that every problem we solve leads to new questions, so knowledge can expand indefinitely without hitting a fixed limit. He even speculates that, given enough knowledge, advanced beings might eventually avert cosmic doom, say, prevent the heat death of the universe, or engineer new universes entirely. In other words, knowledge could become an interventionist cosmic force, reshaping destiny. Our knowledge force hypothesis is very much in the spirit of this idea, proposing that knowledge isn't just along for the ride, but actively pushes the universe toward greater complexity and possibility.
When you put Teilhard and Deutsch side by side, it's striking. One was a priest scientist in the 1950s imagining a cosmic ascent of mind. The other is a quantum physicist in the 2010s talking about endless problem solving. Different language, same music, knowledge as a driving principle of evolution. It gives me chills. And there's a nice validation here for the knowledge force hypothesis. If such different minds intuited this pattern, maybe we're onto something real.
It's true. We're essentially taking those intuitions, knowledge as cosmic driver, and examining them through the lens of modern information theory, biology, and complexity science. Let's bridge into those, because by quantifying information, scientists gave us tools to ground these intuitions. Part 2 of 7, As Shannon's Bits Dance with Bateson's Differences.
Here comes Claude Shannon, the father of information theory. In 1948, Shannon formalized what information is in a mathematical sense. He introduced the concept of the bit, binary digit, and defined information entropy, essentially a measure of uncertainty or surprise in a message. Now, Shannon's theory was about telecommunication, how many bits can you send through a noisy channel, etc. Not about knowledge directly, but it laid the groundwork by showing that information can be quantified.
Right. In the knowledge force hypothesis, we piggyback on Shannon's insight that information reduces uncertainty. It's negentropic, meaning it fights against entropy by adding order. We consider knowledge as a special subset of information, not just raw bits, but bits that matter, information that is meaningful and adaptive for a system. Think of it this way. Data is a bunch of bits. Information is data that has meaning. It answers a question or reduces uncertainty. Knowledge is information that an organism or system can actually use to survive, grow, or achieve goals. In our metaphor, knowledge flows through the universe like a kind of refined fuel, distilled from raw data via processes like life and learning. Shannon gave us the image of information flowing like a fluid through channels with limited capacity. We extend that. Knowledge flows through biological, cultural, and now technological channels, with the SRA-CLF factors acting like the channel properties. This idea of meaningful information was captured beautifully by Gregory Bateson, who defined information as a difference that makes a difference. This perfectly captures why knowledge must be active. It only matters if it changes something. The knowledge force is the embodiment of that principle, the causal efficacy of structured information making a difference in the universe.
A great metaphor. Building on Bateson's insight, he was also thinking about cybernetics and feedback loops in the 1960s, 70s. exploring how organisms learn and evolve. He even talked about levels of learning, like learning to learn. He called this deuterolearning, which resonates with how our substrates, DNA, brains, cultures, AI, have evolved to get better at acquiring knowledge over time. It's as if nature has been upgrading its information processing systems across epochs, exactly what the knowledge force hypothesis proposes.
Yes, Bateson's work and early cybernetics pioneers like Norbert Wiener and W. Ross Ashby give us a language for this. Ashby's law of requisite variety states that to control a complex system, you need at least as much complexity in your control mechanism. This finds a direct parallel in the knowledge force hypothesis. For a substrate to process increasingly complex knowledge, its own substrate capacity must evolve to match that complexity. Cybernetics is all about communication and control in systems, focusing on feedback loops and self-regulation. Under the knowledge force hypothesis, you can view the knowledge force as a kind of macro cybernetic loop driving systems toward stability and success. For example, our agency and receptivity factors, two of the SRACL, let a system sense the world and react/adapt based on errors, like a thermostat adjusting to temperature, a simple cybernetic system, or a scientist adjusting a theory to fit experimental data. Ashby's law of requisite variety says a system needs a certain complexity of responses to deal with a complex environment. Our substrate capacity concept echoes that. To survive in a complex world, you need a sufficiently complex knowledge structure. In short, to control your destiny, you need enough knowledge variety to match the variety of challenges.
It's fascinating. What started as abstract theory in the mid-20th century now feels very concrete. We live in an era of information networks and cybernetic-like algorithms all around us. Honestly, it brings to mind today's AI systems. They are these massive information processors with feedback loops. Think of how a self-driving car constantly senses and adjusts, or how a recommendation algorithm learns from your clicks. We'll get to AI in a bit. I know we have some goodies from 2023 and more recent to discuss there, but first, let's talk about how knowledge spreads in society, which is another angle the knowledge force hypothesis covers.
Part 3 of 7. Memes as mind viruses. Knowledge propagation in networks. Great segue. The spread of knowledge or ideas through populations can be strikingly similar to the spread of a virus. Decades ago, researchers started modeling innovation diffusion and cultural change using mathematical models borrowed from epidemiology. In the 1970s, people like Everett Rogers popularized the idea of early adopters and laggards in innovation spread. But it can be formalized. Models like SIR, susceptible, infectious, recovered, can be repurposed for memetics, the study of how ideas, memes, propagate. In these models, susceptible individuals haven't heard or adopted an idea yet. Infectious ones are actively spreading it, and recovered might be those who've adopted but stopped proselytizing or who have become immune, tired of the idea. It's a fun analogy. Ideas behave like viruses, with virality, contagion rates, and even epidemics of thought.
What's powerful is that this analogy is now supported by data. In the age of social media, we can literally watch memes, whether it's a dance craze or a scientific paradigm, spread through networks and even quantify the R0, the basic reproduction number, of information. Studies show, for example, that in strongly clustered, segregated networks, misinformation can spread more aggressively because it finds echo chambers that pass it around more uncritically. An experiment in 2023 demonstrated that ideologically segregated networks, where like-minded people mostly connect to each other, ended up with a higher fraction of false information circulating than more integrated networks. Essentially, if a crazy idea wouldn't normally survive broad scrutiny, it can survive and thrive in a walled garden of believers. A bit like a virus that would die out in a mixed population can spread in an isolated village. This is a quantitative backbone for something. The knowledge force hypothesis implies knowledge and pseudo-knowledge spreads in patterned ways, and the structure of our social networks can accelerate or break that spread.
Absolutely. And by 2024-2025, researchers have gotten very granular with this. One study constructed a two-layer model of information spread across different platforms. Imagine X, the former Twitter, which is an open social network, versus WhatsApp, private messenger groups. They found that on an open social network, info spreads radially and explosively from key influencer nodes outward, whereas in a private messenger, it spreads more gradually in clusters, like friend groups. When those two layers interact, say people copy a rumor from a private chat and post it publicly, it can dramatically amplify the spread. Their simulations even showed that integrating platforms, making it easier to share across them, can increase the overall reach of information. This is cutting-edge network science applied to memetics, and it underscores a knowledge force hypothesis point. The force of knowledge is not just in its content, but in its connectivity. The more our world is connected, hello internet, the more powerful knowledge's spread becomes, for better or worse.
For sure, we've seen the for better side, like rapid spread of scientific advances and best practices globally, and the for worse side, like misinformation cascades and viral conspiracy theories. It puts a new spin on our hypothesis. If knowledge is a force, it can be a constructive or destructive force depending on what is propagating. This brings to mind something the knowledge force hypothesis emphasizes. Knowledge isn't always true, it's just adaptive information. Sometimes false ideas can be adaptive for a while, for social bonding, etc. But in the long run, reality tends to bite back. That's where mechanisms of error correction come in, which leads us into evolutionary epistemology and thinkers like Karl Popper.
Part 4 of 7, Evolutionary Epistemology, Trial, Error, and Selection of Ideas. Ah, yes, Sir Karl Popper. Popper was a philosopher of science who proposed that knowledge, especially scientific knowledge, grows through a process of conjectures and refutations. You guess a theory, then you try to falsify it through experiments. Only the theories that survive this trial by fire of reality are tentatively kept. Popper often compared this to Darwinian evolution, and indeed he called himself an evolutionary epistemologist. In biology, organisms generate mutations, random guesses at a solution, and the environment refutes the bad ones via death, keeping only the successful adaptations. Popper said science works analogously. We generate bold hypotheses and let empirical testing kill off the wrong ones.
In our narrative, this maps to the knowledge force pretty directly. Knowledge doesn't magically descend fully formed. It emerges from trial and error on various substrates. Genes try forms, most fail, a few succeed, producing biological knowledge on how to fly, how to photosynthesize, how to sense, for example. Brains try behaviors or ideas, many fail, some work, producing learned knowledge. Societies try technologies or policies. The bad ideas get abandoned, or should be. The good ones spread. It's selection, selection, selection all the way. So, the knowledge force, in a sense, operates via this filtering. And crucially, it needs friction, the drag of errors and reality checks, to keep it on course. If anything could spread without restraint or correction, our knowledge systems would fill up with fantasy and nonsense. Popper's insistence on falsifiability is basically saying we need a mechanism to weed out false knowledge, the same way natural selection weeds out unfit organisms.
Well put. And building on Popper, we can mention Donald T. Campbell, a psychologist who formalized the evolutionary epistemology idea as BVSR, blind variation and selective retention. He said this process of generating lots of variations and then keeping only what works is a universal knowledge-gaining mechanism, whether in biology, science, or even creative thought. The knowledge force hypothesis aligns with that. It doesn't propose some mystical force that instantly grants truth, but rather a persistent drive that through many trials accumulates adaptations, i.e. knowledge. In our terms, the substrates keep evolving greater knowledge by generating and testing variations, from random gene mutations to scientists brainstorming theories or AIs tweaking algorithms.
And let's acknowledge, not everyone is as optimistic as Deutsch about unbounded growth. Some critics point out that even if knowledge can, in principle, expand indefinitely, in practice we might hit diminishing returns, or new knowledge might create new problems that are just as hard, so we're running in place. It's a valid caution. But overall, the trend has been upwards. More knowledge, more power, as long as we manage not to destroy ourselves. A big caveat. This is why discussions today in the 2020s often revolve around knowledge stewardship. How do we guide the explosive growth of knowledge in directions that are good for humanity and the planet? And that brings us to a hot topic, AI and alignment.
Part 5 of 7, of Memes and Machines, AI Alignment and the Knowledge Ecosystem. Indeed, if the knowledge force posits a relentless force of knowledge seeking to propagate and complexify, we're living through a test of that right now with artificial intelligence. In the last couple of years, since 2023, AI systems, especially large language models and other generative AI, have grown astonishingly capable. They are, in a sense, new substrates for knowledge with huge capacity and agency to generate information. By early 2023, OpenAI's ChatGPT had reached 100 million users within 2 months of launch, the fastest adoption of any consumer application in history. Think about that, an AI system spreading knowledge, and yes, sometimes misinformation, to hundreds of millions of people, basically overnight. It's as if we unleashed a new super channel for the knowledge force, one that massively amplifies how quickly information can be generated and disseminated.
And that's a double-edged sword. On one hand, these models can concentrate and deliver human knowledge in useful ways. You can ask ChatGPT, Grok, Claude, Gemini, or one of the other AIs about almost anything and get a decent answer, drawing on information from all over. On the other hand, if they're not aligned with our values or with truth, they can dish out convincing falsehoods or harmful content just as easily. We've seen missteps where AI systems hallucinate facts or reflect the biases in their training data. This has led to an acute awareness in the AI community of the alignment problem. How do we ensure that as AI knowledge grows, it stays steered toward human beneficial outcomes? In knowledge force hypothesis terms, it's like asking, how do we put the right friction in place, the error correction and goals, for this blazing fast knowledge engine we've created?
The response has been significant. 2 years ago, in 2023, OpenAI announced a dedicated super alignment initiative, explicitly aiming to solve the technical challenges of aligning super intelligent AI within 4 years. They're pouring massive resources into it, 20% of their total compute, because they recognize how crucial this is. The team, co-led by Ilya Setskever and Jan Like, is essentially trying to build AI that can help us align AI, a very meta approach. And they're exploring new techniques, scalable oversight, using AI to monitor AI, automated testing for misbehavior, interpretability research to peek inside the black box minds of these models. It's a full court press to ensure the knowledge force coursing through AI doesn't run away in a dangerous direction.
Meanwhile, other organizations like DeepMind, now Google DeepMind, have also been ramping up AI safety research. By 2024, Google DeepMind's safety team had grown by roughly 40% in a year, and they've been tackling everything from training AIs to be truthful and refrain from harmful behaviors, to developing techniques like constitutional AI, used by Anthropic's Claude, that imbue models with a set of guiding principles. There's also fascinating work on mechanistic interpretability, basically trying to reverse engineer the circuits of reasoning inside neural networks. It reminds me of trying to identify how knowledge is structured within an AI, almost analogous to neuroscientists mapping a brain. All of this aligns with our discussion. It's humanity consciously shaping the evolution of knowledge within our created systems.
And speaking of evolution of knowledge, it's worth noting how AI itself is contributing. Some AIs are trained using evolutionary algorithms, literally by generating variations of models or strategies and selecting the best, which is exactly blind variation and selective retention in action. Even techniques like reinforcement learning can be seen as accelerated trial and error knowledge gain. The kicker is, unlike biological or cultural evolution, AI evolution can happen at silicon speed, millions of trials in a second in simulation. That's why we saw such rapid leaps in capabilities. In 2023, a Microsoft research paper even went so far as to say GPT-4 displays sparks of artificial general intelligence because it performed astonishingly well on a broad array of tasks, from coding to medical questions. The authors suggested GPT-4 could be seen as an early yet incomplete form of AGI. And in even more recent research papers, the latest models from OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, X, and others are getting better and better at these tasks at near human level. Now, not everyone agrees with that. It's hotly debated, but the fact it's debated at all is remarkable. It means we might be at the threshold of machines that at least mimic the breadth of human-like knowledge.
Of course, there's a chorus of experts pointing out that mimicry isn't understanding. This leads into philosophical territory. Are these AIs truly knowing or just regurgitating patterns? In 2022, we even had a Google engineer claim that the chatbot Lambda was sentient because it produced such human-like, seemingly introspective dialogue. Google swiftly disagreed and fired him, but it ignited public debate about what it means for an AI to be conscious or have genuine understanding. Cognitive scientists and philosophers jumped in to clarify that, as advanced as these systems are, they don't have the qualities of lived experience or self-awareness as we understand them. They lack a true experiential mind or grounding in the world. However, this debate has been healthy. It's forced us to sharpen definitions of consciousness and examine the complexity of the brain versus the complexity in AI.
And neuroscience provides an interesting parallel here. A lot of current research into human consciousness indeed focuses on complexity and information integration in the brain. One prominent theory, integrated information theory, IIT, even posits that consciousness corresponds to the amount of integrated information, denoted as phi, in a system. Whether or not IIT is the whole story, it's suggestive that measures of brain complexity correlate with states of consciousness. In late 2023, a study reported that the complexity of brain activity is lowest when people are under deep anesthesia, higher when they're awake, and even higher during psychedelic experiences. In other words, more diverse, richly integrated brain signals equals richer conscious experience. This doesn't mean quantity of information alone makes a mind, but it implies that the structure and integration of knowledge in a system might underlie its subjective awareness.
That's a captivating thought. The quality of consciousness might be tied to how information is organized. It suggests a continuity, from matter, to life, to mind, to maybe machine minds. What changes is how information knowledge is structured and integrated. Process philosophers like Whitehead and Bergson, whom we mentioned earlier, would nod here. Reality is process, flux, and increasing organization. Whitehead talked about the universe as a continuous process of becoming, not static being. Bergson's concept of élan vital, a creative evolutionary impulse, can be seen as a poetic precursor to the knowledge force, an underlying drive toward greater complexity and novelty in life. We can see modern complexity science and information theory adding meat to those bones. Today's neuroscientists and AI researchers are grappling with how matter and information give rise to mind, essentially exploring the same bridge between physics and knowledge that Whitehead and others philosophized about.
And let's not forget, these threads run all the way out to cosmology as well. Increasingly, some scientists talk in terms of information when describing the universe. John Archibald Wheeler's famous phrase, it from bit, encapsulates the idea that physical reality, it, fundamentally arises from information, bit. In Deutsch's work, as we said, there's speculation that knowledge could eventually affect cosmic outcomes, like avoiding heat death. While that remains speculative, what's concrete is that information-centric views are influencing physics. For example, the black hole information paradox, a big debate in physics, revolves around whether information is truly lost in a black hole. recent theoretical breakthroughs, like the idea of quantum teleportation via wormholes, suggest that information may not be lost after all, preserving unitarity in quantum mechanics. It's technical, but the takeaway is physical laws seem to safeguard information at fundamental levels. Some have even proposed experiments to test if information has a small mass, treating information as a physical substance. In 2022, a physicist named Melvin Vopson suggested that a bit of information might have an equivalent mass on the order of 10 to the power of negative 38 kilograms, and he's looking for ways to detect this information matter. Imagine the mass of a single particle of light. That's roughly how much one bit of information might weigh. It's so tiny that all human knowledge combined would weigh less than a grain of sand, but the philosophical implications are staggering. Vopson dubbed information the potential fifth state of matter alongside solid, liquid, gas, and plasma. Imagine that. Knowledge with weight, literally.
That is mind-blowing, right? Even if that particular experiment doesn't pan out, the symbolism is rich. It's as if we're converging on a view of the universe where information and knowledge aren't just ephemeral abstractions, they're central to reality's fabric. The knowledge force hypothesis fits into this zeitgeist by boldly saying, yes, not only is knowledge fundamental, it behaves like a force with directional effects that can be felt across biological, social, and even cosmic scales.
Part 6 of 7. Synthesizing the threads toward a coherent narrative. So let's step back and look at what we've bridged today. We started with historical and philosophical hints, Teilhard's noosphere, Popper's evolutionary epistemology, Whitehead's process philosophy, all suggesting an upslope of knowledge and complexity in the universe. Then we dove into the scientific frameworks that transformed those philosophical intuitions into something more concrete. We saw how Shannon's information theory gave us the mathematics of bits and entropy, while Bateson showed us that information only matters when it makes a difference. The cybernetics pioneers like Wiener and Ashby taught us about feedback loops and how systems need sufficient complexity to control their environment. We explored how ideas spread like viruses through social networks with all the mathematical precision of epidemiology. Kaufman revealed how complex systems naturally organize themselves at the edge of chaos, while Campbell gave us that universal algorithm, blind variation, and selective retention, showing how everything from genes to scientific theories evolves through trial and error. Each piece built on the last, creating a scaffold that could actually support the weight of our ambitious hypothesis. All of these pieces, from different fields, resonate with the idea that knowledge grows and drives change.
What's even more exciting is that we overlaid the current recent landscape from 2023 until now onto this, and it still fits. In fact, it fits now more than ever. We're witnessing exponential knowledge growth. The AI revolution is a prime example. And we're also recognizing the challenges it brings: alignment, misinformation. But in each challenge, we see reflections of our earlier lessons. For misinformation, the solution might lie in network design and better immune systems for mimetic spread, essentially applying epidemiology and Popperian error correction to social media. For AI, the alignment work is about building in the right feedback loops and constraints, a very cybernetic notion, to ensure the knowledge AIs generate remains tethered to human values and truths. Even in neuroscience and cosmology, the quest is to unify mind, matter, and information into one narrative, which is exactly the bridge the knowledge force hypothesis tries to walk.
There's a beautiful continuity in all this. I dare say it feels like we're honing in on a kind of theory of everything for understanding change. Forces produce order, and maybe knowledge is the force that produces adaptive order. Gravity shapes the cosmos's structure. Knowledge shapes the structure of life, mind, and civilization. And, perhaps, one day, will shape the cosmos deliberately, if Deutsch is right.
Before we sound too grandiose, let's acknowledge, the knowledge force hypothesis is still a hypothesis. It's a framework that we find incredibly evocative and increasingly supported by cross-disciplinary insights, but it will need to be tested and fleshed out. However, what we've done in this episode is synthesize a lot of wisdom to show that this idea doesn't stand alone. It's standing on the shoulders of giants and also on the algorithms of today's tech giants.
Nicely put, and it's an ongoing story. As we move forward, one key will be to identify metrics and evidence for the knowledge force hypothesis. For example, can we measure a knowledge force in ecosystems or economies? Can we see predictive signatures of the knowledge force hypothesis in data, like a tendency for complexity to ratchet up over time and less constrained? These are questions for future research and future episodes.
One thing's for sure, keeping our podcast listeners updated will be easy because breakthroughs keep happening. Just in the time between recording and releasing this, who knows, maybe someone will demonstrate that elusive experiments showing information has mass, or an AI will make a Nobel-worthy discovery on its own. The pace of knowledge creation is breathtaking, and as students of the knowledge force, we are living in a very exciting and a tad scary era where its effects are on full display.
Well said, Archie. And that brings us to the end of this seventh episode, part 7 of 7. Closing thoughts. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us on this grand tour, bridging the knowledge force hypothesis with information theory, systems thinking, evolutionary epistemology, complexity science, philosophy, and the bleeding edge of AI and neuroscience. We hope this episode not only informed you, but also inspired you to see connections that perhaps weren't obvious before.
The conversation doesn't end here. We invite you to send in your thoughts, questions, or relevant new findings you've come across. After all, in a show about the force of knowledge, we value your knowledge too. Let's keep this collaborative inquiry going.
In the next episode, we'll delve into ethical stewardship and human responsibility in the discourse and evolution of AI. But until then, stay curious and observe the world around you with this new lens the knowledge force hypothesis provides. Thank you for listening. And let's rethink everything.